Hi.
Hi.
This is Kristen Higgins.
And Joss Day.
And welcome to Crappy Friends, a podcast discussing toxic female relationships, how to deal with and ditch your crappy friends, how to avoid making the same mistakes twice, and how to create the kind of friendships that make life fun.
This is Girl Power Defeating Bitchery since 2018.
Yes, girl. Preach it.
Yeah.
All right. So, to introduce ourselves, I am Kristen Higgins, a New York Times bestselling author of nearly 20 books. And Joss?
I am a USA Today bestselling author of one book. a very long book.
It's very long. It's
really, one very long book. And met Kristen about
9 years ago?
Could be.
Yeah.
It's wow. Yeah. So,
happy anniversary.
Yay.
And we are best friends.
We are.
And we wanted to do this podcast because we met through writing, and but we really became super close friends when we started talking about the nature of female friendship.
Right.
And in particular, we had one friend.
Esmeralda.
Esmeralda. Not her real name. Right? And so what we're going to do is tell you about our experience with this friend and why she was crappy and how we should have known. So episode one, we're going to call Red Flags.
Draped in red flags.
Draped in red flags.
My God.
So
we met Esmeralda in our writing group. And she was adorable and quirky and fun. And
we just took her at face value.
Yeah.
She was all those things. Energetic.
Yes.
Sweet.
All of those things. And really just very warm person, willing to go the extra mile. This would have made a great friend, we thought.
So we thought.
And so before Kristen and I became close, Esmeralda and I and another friend from our writing group just started a plotting group. And we met maybe once a month at each other's houses and helped each other learn how to write, be better writers. And Esmeralda seemed great. She seemed great. There didn't seem initially a lot of red flags. She was a very positive person, so enthusiastic, and like I said, very warm and funny.
But the first red flag that we blatantly ignored was her inability to accept any kind of suggestions or critique. So we would go away for plotting weekends and flesh each other's books out and, you know, talk about character development and plot twists and all those things, as one does. And Esmeralda would never accept a suggestion.
Not one. Not even a grammatical suggestion.
Yeah, like, here, we need a comma here.
Yeah.
But she would instead take a great deal of time to explain why this situation would work. And I remember saying to her on our first weekend together, you know, if you love this book exactly the way it is, that's great, but you shouldn't be here on a plotting weekend, on a critiquing weekend. Because you know, great, love your book, but don't ask for our input and then just summarily reject it.
Right.
You know?
What she loved to do also was tell a sort of exaggerated story about why her scenario in her book was right.
Yes.
Not necessarily that it would work, but it was right. And oftentimes I remember saying, well, you know, Esmeralda, that's a lifetime for television movie that you're describing. That's not quite the plot that people want to see in a romance.
Right.
Or yeah, she was writing contemporary at the time.
Yes. And then the next red flag also came up on one of our first weekends together, which was her statement that it was so nice to have female friends because she didn't have any and she never had.
Yeah, she only got along well with men.
Right.
Which is a huge red flag.
Which we, again, ignored.
Explained it away.
We felt special, didn't we, Joss?
We did. We were the first female friend she had. We must have been so fabulous for her to choose us.
I mean, we are. That's true. That's true. But that was a red flag that we kind of ignored. She had, at first it seemed like she had varied interests, but as we got to know her better, we started to see she had no outside interests that didn't relate to her husband and his job and his co-workers. She was very distrustful of him, and so she was always inserting herself into his friends. You know, I mean, I think it's great when men have friendships outside of the marriage and stuff, but, she, you know, if he had a poker night, she would go. She would drop by his work every shift.
With cookies or something
like that. With cookies,
you
know, trying to ingratiate herself and show how great she was. And, you know, she was also a generous person, so it kind of took us a while to catch on.
Right.
That, you know, she was just always kind of wanting that male attention.
Right. I mean, and she was a little bit like a puppy with the need for that attention. She would have, they would have great parties, and I went to one. And she would be sort of sprawled on people's laps.
Yes.
Keep in mind, we are, you know, 37, 38-year-old women at this point.
Right.
And she was just sort of all over people, very touchy.
Yeah.
And I would see that and think, good Lord, what does her husband think? And she insisted he was fine
yep.
with all of that.
And that even led to further conversation about how fine he was that they had an open marriage. And, you know, we're not judging people who have open marriages that work, but we weren't really sure that they had an open marriage until...
Until she suggested that she wouldn't mind if I, Joss...
joined them.
Well, yes. And you know, let me just put it out there, I am not about that sister wives life. That's not my life. It's never been. I've never had aspirations to be a sister wife.
Yeah, no.
So she would say this pretty regularly, and I would be kind of...
Horrified
and really uncomfortable. But, you know, the other friend who was with us, she didn't say anything, so I didn't say... I thought I was not being progressive enough or something like that.
Or it was a joke, maybe.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think the other thing about this friendship... is that because there were three and then four of us, we never actually talked to each other.
Right.
We just...
Because, you know, you don't talk behind your friend's backs.
Of course
it's
not.
One of the codes of female friendship.
So we just absorbed this weird behavior
yeah.
and tried to normalize it.
And so another offshoot of that was that she would tell a story to me and I would believe it. And then I would hear her tell the same story when other people were there, and it would be different. I would say, oh, but I thought you took care of your mother-in-law as she was dying.
Right.
Whereas she may have told Joss and our other friends that she wasn't allowed to see her mother-in-law when she was dying.
Forbidden, in fact. That's right.
Which was, that language
was... strong.
Yeah, strong yeah. language. Things were not going great with the friendship, but then her husband told her he wanted a divorce.
Right.
So we rallied around her.
Right.
As friends do. And, of course, we were her only three female friends,
right.
according to her. And so we kind of put up with her very emotional state. And, you know, she was getting divorced. It was horrible. She'd been
right.
married since she was, like, 23.
Yeah.
And she was devastated. So we spent more time with her, and we started hearing more about her life. And a lot of the stories that she told us seemed to be with the recurrent theme of men adore me.
They find me very attractive.
And we agreed. She was a very cute, energetic, seemingly optimistic person. But she would tell us these stories about, like, her husband's best friend and how they would like cuddle together in bed, and but it was fine. And I would say, gee, you know, that wouldn't be fine in my marriage, you know, and our other friend agreed.
Right.
And I invited her to that Christmas party.
Right.
Right. And you were there as well, Joss. And my single brother-in-law was also there, poor lamb. And she just, I mean, we probably had 15 or 20 people at that party, and she pretty much attached herself to him, spoke to no one else for 4 or 5 hours. And before she had even gotten down my driveway, which, you know, is a long driveway, but still, she had texted me to say, OMG, your brother-in-law is so cute. Do you think he'd be interested in seeing me? And I asked him, and he said, absolutely not.
She'd also called me to make sure that I wasn't interested, sort of clearing the field.
Within hours. It's Christmas Eve, and right. I'm putting presents under the tree.
Right.
And she's texting me about, does my brother-in-law want to date her? And then once I said, sorry, no, he's not interested, she said, well, what about if he would like to go hiking with me? Or, because we both love hiking, and I'm just looking for, like, a hiking partner. And Joss, you would say, like, well, you know, why don't you join a hiking club or go to meetup.com?
Meetup, yes.
You know, if you're looking for people to hike with, yeah. You know.
There are ways to find right. it.
But she didn't want people. She wanted him.
Yeah. Right. She definitely wanted him.
And then came the stories about sort of these innocent, childlike sexual encounters. Like the, oopsie, yeah. He saw my boobs.
Right. Or I didn't know that it was a leg that I was touching. I thought it was a table leg.
Yeah, there was one time when she got dizzy and she was getting up, and so she grabbed the leg of the table and it helped herself up. And guess what? Turns out it was her boss's leg.
Well, and he was quite attractive, by the way.
Yes. And, you know, and then she would say, oh, it was so hilarious. I leaned over him, not realizing I was wearing a loose, low-cut yeah. dress and no bra.
Right. And no bra, right.
And, you know, and stories like going back years yeah. that she's now telling us that, you know, we've now been friends for like 5 or 6 years.
Correct, yes.
And, all these stories about, oops, the time my bikini top came off.
When
and
I jumped
oops,
in the pool.
The time, you know, that the guy was cutting the lawn and I accidentally came out on the porch naked. And
right.
You know. And then she, when things got really bad, it was when she started to, you know, have her crazy train running off the rails.
It was. Right?
She told us about when her mother-in-law died that she ran 5 miles in the snow.
Barefoot. Because she was so upset.
Because she was so devastated. Which to me is like, that is, I mean, the mother-in-law may have been very beloved.
Right.
We never really got a straight answer on that. But she had been sick for some time.
Yes.
And it wasn't a shock.
No.
She had cancer. She was dying. And so that reaction was very strange.
She also threw the brick through her own screen door. This was right. as she and her husband were separating, and yeah. I don't quite remember what made her so angry that she would throw, it wasn't a brick, it was like a concrete
block.
Yeah. Through yeah. her, and, you know, needed significant repair not only to the door, but to the staircase inside the house where it landed.
Yeah.
And
trashing his room.
Trashing his room, and I just, you know, I was a grown-ass woman. This seemed like really yes. juvenile behavior to me.
Yeah.
And I still, we as a group never talked behind her back.
Right.
And I know, personally, I excused a lot of it. She was going through this separation and the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I found a way to make it normal. I found
right.
a way. You know, you do right. that, as you do.
And I think the end of the friendship, like when we could no longer deal, was when she started dating somebody new.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rule of thumb tends to be don't date anyone for a year.
Right.
She found this guy, and she decided he was the one. And I guess, like, they had a one-night stand. And she became absolutely fixated on him.
Yes, she was very obsessed. and made herself into kind of a doormat for him.
Yeah.
He was very clear about his feelings for her, I think right from the beginning, which was he was not interested in her.
Yeah.
But she went above and beyond to try and secure his regard.
Right.
She said, during one of the worst blizzards that we'd ever have, I think we got 40 inches of snow. Right.
The governor shut the state kind of thing.
Shut the state down. And she still, with her mother, had her mother come down to meet him.
That's right, right, right.
With her mother, drove to him so that he could meet her mother and they could shop in the little town where he lived.
Even though all the roads were closed and, you know. But yeah, she went to these great lengths. He told her, lose my number. I don't want to see you anymore.
Right.
And she would, you know, she'd call us and say, you know, she's crying hysterically for 5 hours. And then she would write him a 10-page handwritten letter begging him, why did this happen? And it was just so uncomfortable. But the straw that broke my back was we were at my house and we were saying, look, this guy has a DUI. Mm-hmm. He's admitted to you that he sleeps with many women, including married women.
Right.
You are a healthcare professional.
Yes.
You know, you should know better. And her response was, it's okay. I check him for sores before we have sex.
I'm very careful.
I need a shower, Joss.
And what came after that was just silence. Just stunned silence.
Right.
And this revelation was part of just this litany of talking about herself and him, where we said not a word. We didn't draw breath. She didn't draw breath once.
Yeah.
And then culminating in checking for sores. And
I finally had to talk to her. Our other smarter friend had ditched by this point, but Joss and I were hanging in there. And I finally said, look, you know, this is really trashy behavior. Mm-hmm. And you have to take a step back, you know? And we are concerned about you. That's, I think, that when we finally started saying, like, this is bigger than just her being a little cray-cray because of the divorce.
Right. I mean, it's reckless behavior. Right. It's really reckless.
It was. And so we kind of spoke to her jointly and said, we have these concerns. We're worried about you. We care about you. But you're really going off the rails. And at first, like, for about 30 seconds, there was a, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for caring about me. Can we talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
And then followed lengthy exchanges about why we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She was right.
Mm-hmm.
Just like going back to that critique group in the beginning of the friendship.
Right.
She could justify anything.
And not only that, here's what's wrong with you, Joss, and here's what's wrong with you, Kristen.
Right.
This is why you aren't that great either.
Yeah. And, you know, we understand it hurts to have your friends, like, take you aside and say, you need to draw breath, you know, you're making bad decisions, but that's what friends do, right? So it sounds like we're idiots for putting up with this friend.
Right.
And, yeah, we kind of are.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
We own that.
Absolutely.
But it did happen over the course of 6 or 7 years.
Easily, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it was really hard and really unpleasant and really necessary.
Yes.
So the moral of the story is you're allowed to be discerning with your friends. And not only are you allowed to notice the red flags, you must notice them. It's stupid to walk into a burning building without protective gear.
It's
right?
True. I mean, you can use the same strategies that you might use in a romantic relationship. Yeah. In a friendship.
Right, but we have this mythology about female friends. Like, you meet someone, you hit it off, and you're friends to the grave, you know?
Best friends forever.
Yeah, and like, women are superior to men in relationships, and we have each other's backs. And, you know, we do.
Yeah.
We do, but not everybody. You know, you don't have to be friends with every woman that comes around just because you had a sparkling conversation one night. And I mean, throughout our 40s, I think you and I we've both learned so much about that, about, you know, I mean, we both meet hundreds, sometimes thousands of people a year. We can't be best friends with them all.
No.
We shouldn't be best friends with them all.
No.
Doesn't mean that we don't like people or enjoy spending time with them, but there's a process to friendship. And when the process starts popping up with all these red flags, you got to pay attention.
Yeah.
Don't be dumb like us.
Don't be dumb like us. And do recognize that there is a process. I think for me, that's one thing that it never occurred to me was that there should be, you know, a first date. I'm making air quotes here. There should be like a first date and a second date and a getting to know you period. You don't have to dive right in.
Right.
You don't have to ignore all these red flags in favor of
You just say like, hey, we're friends.
Yeah. You don't have to stick with it once you realize. I think that's the other mistake women make a lot is they stick with this friend through thick and thin, even though this friend is this.
Yeah, she just drained the life out of us, you know, and she became exhausting and there was never any reciprocity, you know, because we weren't needy the way she was needy. She moved on in life, and we wish her nothing but the best and some good medication and a therapist. So now we're going to take a letter.
Yeah.
Because we take letters.
We do.
We do. And our email address is
theladies@crappyfriends.net.
Once again, theladies@crappyfriends.net. So here's our first letter. And it's one of those red flag scenarios. Dear ladies, I was getting married and asked my best friend from high school to be my maid of honor. We were both Greek girls and had formed a bond when we met in 10th grade. We had grown a little apart as we went to university, and I had caught her in a few fibs over the years, but I always made excuses.
Sound familiar?
It does. She had also done her best to mess up a new relationship I had with a young man I had met at her 22nd birthday party. Dun, dun, dun. But that ended quite quickly, and I had since gone on to meet my fiancé, so I was a happy and forgiving 24-year-old bride, and was sure that the wedding would be an opportunity for us to reconnect.
Because that's what you do at weddings when you're the bride, is reconnect with friends who are kind of not that great.
And the letter writer says, and surely I had misunderstood the events from 2 years before.
Surely.
Honey, you did not. you misunderstood nothing. She was not the helpful friend I envisioned.
What? What?
Not that I asked her to do much. Just come to the dress fittings, help me open gifts at the shower, and generally be pleasant. Okay? If you have to ask your friend to be pleasant and even just a tiny bit helpful as your maid of honor, you have picked the wrong person.
Correct.
Unfortunately, she hated the dress. Bitch, please. Okay. We all hate our bridesmaid's dress.
Please.
Right? It was 1990 and blue organza was the style, so I understand her point looking back, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. Right?
Having worn my share of ugly bridesmaid's dresses, mm-hmm. I kind of expected her to suck it up.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I did.
She did not. She complained endlessly and even brought her mother to one of the fittings to help her complain.
It's pretty ballsy, actually. Right?
In the end, I agreed to modifications on the dress and to pay for half of it.
You're out of your mind.
Crazy. Mm. Eventually, we reached a tentative peace. Now, tentative peace and maid of honor aren't words that should go together.
Agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
Okay, so she talks about stressful wedding planning and pleasing your mother-in-law, and dealing with a friend who doesn't like the dress just added unnecessary angst to the wedding planning. The day went off fine. We had a lovely honeymoon in Florida, and when we returned, I called her. I suggested she come by the new house for lunch. She never did.
What?
She never paid me for the dress, either.
No.
Gasp.
I know.
Right? But I consider it money well spent, as it told me a lot about her character. It sure did. Mm. I mean, all the whole way she acted was horrible. I bet from high school on.
Yeah.
Over the years, with the advent of social media, we've had polite connections on LinkedIn and Facebook, which means nothing.
Yeah.
But we have never spoken since May of 1990. 28 happy years and 3 beautiful children later, I find I have not missed her. Mm. I don't think she was ever really happy for me, and I doubt she would have brought anything positive to my life.
Exactly.
You are correct.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, it's very telling. Like, I haven't missed our Esmeralda either.
I have to confess that when we sort of confronted her with our concerns, and she came back with that horrible, bitchy, frankly, response. It was kind of mean.
Yeah.
And then she sort of, we never heard from her again. I was kind of relieved.
I know. I felt guilty, yes. But I also felt cleaner.
Yes.
You know?
Just relieved. Yeah. I mean, because she was something I had to deal with. She wasn't a friend. Oh, I'm going to see Esmeralda. Let me, you know, emotionally gird my loins and just get through it. And believe you me, you know, during especially the last 2 years of our friendship, we would have moments where we'd all get together and I would be sick. I'm again making air quotes.
Yeah.
Because I just couldn't do it.
We took turns being sick. I don't think the 4 of us were ever together.
No. You know,
because we just couldn't deal.
Couldn't do it.
So, you know, that's the name of this podcast for a reason.
Yeah.
Crappy friends ain't got time for that. but you do have time for great friends. So
you do.
Thank you for listening to our virgin episode.
Inaugural.
Inaugural.
Yeah.
Better word?
Yeah.
I like mine better.
Virgin is good.
And tune in again for Crappy Friends.